this little excursion called democracy. And just like I said before, it's your democracy, and it's not a spectator sport. We'll see you tomorrow from the Bruce Birch radio program. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be all right. That's how it felt to be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried.
Al-Say killed 200 people. No one has claimed responsibility for the attacks, but Indian officials suspect a militant group from Kashmir. In Iraq today, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld held a joint news conference with U.S. General George Casey during an unannounced visit. Casey said he believes sectarian violence is now a larger threat than Al-Qaeda. Nearly 30 people died today in attacks. President Bush has arrived in Europe, where he will meet with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Mr. Bush will stay there until Friday, when he leaves for this weekend's G8 summit in Russia. On Capitol Hill, senators will vote this month on a bill that would allow oil drilling in 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. Today, they agreed to ban drilling within 125 miles of Florida's coast until the year 2022. In California's Yucca Valley, a wildfire has destroyed 30 buildings. Dozens of people have been evacuated as firefighters continue battling the blaze. In Chicago, authorities have reopened a subway that was shut down yesterday after a fire. More than 150 people were injured in the incident. Law enforcement officials say the fire appears to have been an accident. The U.S. government has a new way of alerting the public to emergencies through their cell phones and computers. The system is based on one built during the Cold War era and involves the participation of broadcast media. It's expected to be available nationally at the end of next year. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Funeral services were held today for former Enron founder Kenneth Lay. He was remembered as a devout Christian and family man. The FDA has approved a single pill to replace the three-pill-a-day regimen for those infected with HIV and AIDS. Gilead Sciences expects to make the pill a triple available within 1 week. The U.S. Army is calling for government contract bids in Iraq and other areas. Halliburton previously held an exclusive multi-million-dollar contract with the Pentagon. Sitka Petroleum is reportedly saying it will no longer sell gas to nearly 2,000 stations across the United States. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez says Sitka's business amounts to a subsidy for the U.S. economy. The federal government says higher oil prices raised the U.S. trade deficit in May. The trade gap now stands at nearly $64 billion. Newspaper publishing company Gannett is reporting a more than 8% drop in its quarterly profit. A slow British market and loss of ad revenues are blamed. It was a record year for tribal casinos, which pulled in $22.6 billion in gambling revenue. That's double the take in Nevada. Light sweet crude settled at $74.95 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 122 points at 11,103. NASDAQ down 39 at 2090. S&P 500 down 14 at 1259. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. No other way to do it, is there? Welcome, 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 wherever you are, however you are. What I am is glad that you could join me this evening. Join Agnes and me. It's been a busy little day here in the Head On Studios. Things happen here that could only happen to Agnes and me. Like, for instance, this afternoon, it's kind of muggy, and I had a door open and a window cracked to create a little cross ventilation for a little bit, trying to cut down on energy usage, that kind of thing. Well, suffice to say that this is just such a lovely tie-in, considering what night it is.
Every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club. We are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Right. No, the things happen here. So I got a window open and I got a door open. We're producing at the time Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. And in the corner of my eye... Yeah, in the out of the corner of my eye, I detect this movement. And now I want you to understand, we don't live like, you know, out in the wilds or anything. But, you know, Ellie Mae Clampett, my wife, attracts animals of all sorts. Okay, let me cut to the chase. Today I did battle with a serpent. Because the motion that I detected out of the corner of my eye was a snake. It was a black snake. Harmless.
Coming to talk to me, Adam.
It was on its way to have a chat with Agnes or something. I don't know. But he just, you know, kind of held his head and crawled in the window. Just crawled in the window. Don't mind me, I'm just a black snake, I'm just coming through, right, heading for the door, right, no problem. Where's St. Patrick when you need him? I don't know, well, you know, maybe it's a sign, that's what it is, so we had to deal with that. Oy. Anyway, you know, I tried it, oh my God, there's a snake in my studio. So it's a little bit, you know, it'll, There's something very visceral in most human beings upon seeing the serpent. And you know what? I'm not one of those kind of religion industry people. I did not try to take up that serpent. He was non-poisonous. He wasn't a pit viper. No, I'm ashamed of myself. I borrowed Agnes's broadsword and pinned it to the wall. Oh, my karma is so screwed up. No, I'm not. I'm not kidding. Another day with the Kincaids. And just coming to check us out, you know. I hear you have a lovely show. Nah. Jeez. No more window opening. No more door opening. Just going to sort of hide in a corner and wait. But no, it's prayer meeting edition tonight. I'm sorry. These things happen, and I just got to, because everybody, it's not just every day that happens, but it is prayer meeting edition, which tells, I mean, that there's something about being visited by the serpent on your prayer meeting edition day, and it's just freighted with irony and meaning and stuff.
The snake's coming to get me to tempt Bob. That's what it is. But he didn't make any time with me, so I guess it's okay.
I didn't, or the snake didn't? Well, what?
The snake, dear. I think it's pretty evident by our children you've made time at some point.
Ba-dum-bum. Oh, boy. So much for family radio. No, but tonight's program is brought to you by the letter S. The letter S. And S is for not only serpent, but S is also for sarcasm. Moreover, S is further extension. S is for stupid, because I want to start tonight's prayer meeting edition. Well, let's go to the phones first. Ben is joining us. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Bob.
How are you?
Just fine. You know, them's good eating.
God. Tastes like chicken.
Well, actually, you know, they kind of taste a little bit sweeter and oilier than chicken.
Oily, I'm not up for.
Years ago, Three Diamonds brand, you know, they do the little mandarin oranges and a bunch of other things.
Oh, yeah.
They had canned rattlesnake meat. And I bought a couple of cans just for the heck of it and made rattlesnake salad sandwiches.
Rattlesnake salad sandwiches?
Rattlesnake salad sandwiches. I figured if everyone...
Just like Mama used to make.
You know, I figure if everyone says they taste like chicken, you know, probably they'd go find it in a chicken salad recipe.
Oh, golly Moses.
And I served them to some unsuspecting people who didn't seem to mind or notice.
Well, see, you don't need to be saying that on global radio, Ben, because now you're going to put off your whole dinner party audience, the attendee thing. Oh, look, we got a dinner invitation from Ben. We got to do our hair that night or something. Yeah, watch out for the chicken salad at Ben's house.
Well, it's bad enough that they now think I might actually serve roadkill, you know?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a myth or something around here. You know, it was a black snake. It was the most useful snake in the Appalachians, and I felt very bad about killing it. But he just would not cooperate with being politely escorted out, and I couldn't get my whole, you know, ow, isn't that a beauty? I couldn't get that going for me. I was like, Jesus, it's a snake!
Yeah, we had a friend of mine who was between apartments was left a 5.5 foot long albino Burmese python with me for supposedly a week. It turned into 4 months. So, you know, instead of just having to just, you know, watch the snake as it sat on top of the television, I had to actually feed it. So, and the only thing it would eat, because it wasn't a very socialized snake, you know, some people can get their snakes trained up to eat, like, you know, slightly warmed, you know, raw beef.
Yeah.
Okay? This snake would only eat live things.
Yeah, mice.
Well, it's what we call feeder rats, you know.
Yeah.
They're little rats, you know. And so I'd have to stop at this exotic pet store on the way home from work and buy feeder rats. And then I had like a 40-minute drive, you know, to get to my house from there, because at the time I was commuting quite a way. And so I'd have these little existential discussions with the
student. And I'm just sitting here wondering how an impatient boa constrictor or an impatient python taps its fingers, seeing how it doesn't have any.
This one
sticks a little fork and tongue out and tap it on the table?
Probably. He just stayed coiled up and looked at things all day.
You look like dinner. So do you.
But so, you know, I named one of them Little Dinner. Another one was called Snack. I gave him all these little names. I named another one Sushi. I decided Sushi was a girl.
Yeah, well,
I have these little existential discussions with the rats on the way home about, you know, being and non-being and, you know, existence and transition and grief management thing.
Did you ever give him the whole Latin quote, the nos morituri sibi ecti sunt, or whatever it is, you know?
Actually, yes.
How did I know?
Well, you know, because I went to Catholic school and wasted my time studying Latin.
You see the things I start, Ben?
But on the line of snakes, you know, the perfect music for this. There was a little flash animation that was done many years ago called Badger, 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 which I have now mailed you a link to. And the little song that goes with that would have been perfect for this piece.
Well, if it's on the way to me, it'll probably make the air at some time this evening.
But anyway, so yes, snakes, them's good eating.
A little bit of gravy, fresh biscuits, you betcha. Thanks, Ben.
You take care, sir.
Later.
Bye.
You know, I couldn't do the old Appalachian mythological thing where you grab it by the tail and go, and, you know, they say it just snaps its head right off, but I'm not going to find out. Cats were fascinated. Let's see, to the phones. Peter is with us. I've started something.
Hey, Bob, you have opened up the proverbial can of snakes tonight.
Oh, God.
Everybody's going to call you with a snake story, including me.
Well, I looked at the way, George, is that you? You know.
This happened 3 weeks ago. Doggy and I got into the car. It was a Friday morning. We're going to go down to the Bible study that's down at the church about a mile from here. And Doggy goes with me to the Bible study. I don't, you know, try to smuggle her into, you know, church, but I do take her to the Bible study. So anyway, we get in the car and we drive down our dirt road till we get to the highway and stop the highway and look both ways. And while I was looking both ways before I pulled out, there's this huge snake in the hood of my car. And reared its head, like, you know, reared up the windshield. So Doggy looks at the snake and I look at the snake. And the dog looks at me and I look at the dog. Then we both look back at the snake. Then we both look at each other.
And the snake's still looking at you.
Exactly. Neither one of us were going to get out of that car and deal with that snake. Huge snake. It was kind of gray. It was an oak snake, no doubt. Oak snakes look like rattlesnakes down here. They have like kind of, almost like a diamond back, but they don't have rattles. But no, it was an oak snake. So anyway, I decided we're going to get this snake off this car by just blowing it off. So we got on the highway.
Driving us like a bat out of hell.
40 miles an hour, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. The snake is still hanging up. Got it to 80 miles an hour, and the damn thing wrapped its tail around me. The antenna, the aerial.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we finally got up to 90 miles an hour, and the snake flew up off the top of the car, over the windshield, over the back of the car. It's only like a mile from here through the church, so by then I have to slam on brakes, practically in the parking lot, slam on brakes and whip into the church. Boy, if anybody had been, can you imagine you're driving down the road behind a car and all of a sudden a snake flies up in the air?
It's the rapture.
It's the rapture. Lord, what a day.
Hide the boy.
Yeah. And since it's prayer meeting, I'll throw in one more snake thing. Did you ever see there's a documentary about snake handlers and some of the more bizarre religious, you know, things about, you know, handling snakes and all these, you know. But,
oh, yeah, we got
you know those guys? Their arms are all are scarred. These guys have been bitten by snakes so many times that eventually they develop, you know, antibodies or immunity.
They develop a tolerance.
Exactly.
Well, that and the fact that, you know, they kind of cheat, too, because the snakes are always coming out of, like, one of those Aladdin or you know, igloo coolers.
You think they're chilled snakes?
Yeah, you refrigerate your snake. Your snake gets really lethargic. That's why I didn't reach in there and go, oh, Jesus, and just grab it, you know, because this was a nice, warm, comfy snake.
Oh, that's too funny. That's a totally new concept. Yeah, but anyway, when they start out young, the guys who are doing the snake handling, they end up with a lot of bites. And some of them, of course, they kill some of them, but they have these. It was this documentary, and it was the guy's hand. It was all swollen up, and it was terrible. He had been bitten, you know, just recently. But eventually, that's the way snake handling works, and eventually you just become immune to them.
Well, you know, a practical joke inside the snake handling church is when you get handed the room temperature snake.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to test his faith with a warm one. Help! Oh, glory!
That's funny. Okay, I just want to tell you, I just want, it's going to be a snake night, buddy.
Well, you know, I feel so, it's almost embarrassing, but, I mean, it's not my fault.
Man. I live out in the woods too. I find snakes in this house. I mean, you know, it's, I understand.
Well, you're in Florida, for heaven's sakes. You got mean ones down here. I got copperheads, rattlesnakes, and black snakes to contend with. You know, this poor little thing. I felt so bad. It didn't have the pointy thing and the pits and the viper and the fangs and the no. It's a black snake.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of had a little smile on its face.
I know, but they're.
But it just makes my skin crawl. And like, I didn't have that Steve Irwin thing going. Couldn't do it. Ah, come here, you. Oh, isn't she friendly? Oh, that's lovely.
You know, sometimes I drive down that highway going down, and I wonder to myself, maybe that snake blew up in a tree. It's still wrapped around a limb up there waiting for my car to come back by.
Peter, that snake knows your name.
Yeah, that snake will fall on my car any minute. I'm always cautious.
Well, you know, when they're falling out of trees, they're generally water moccasins. Cottonmouths. Mean ones.
Okay, buddy.
Later.
I'll let you go.
Peter, have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Where can we go from, I mean, how can it get, snakes. I had a guy that used to help me out around the homestead once. He wouldn't say the word, he was so terrified he would not say the word snake. He only referred to them as him. And just, he would, his blood would turn to ice water. The color would drain out of his face. And he'd look at me and say, I was out there using the weed eater, and I saw him, and Bob, I ain't working no more today. See you later. And that was it. It was over. But, you know, I'm proud of us. We both of us, Agnes and I. We produced some darn fine conversation radio today with a snake staring at us. How you doing? I'm a snake. Oh, we're fine. We're doing radio. Would you get... Nah, I'm staying.
He offered me the kiwi, though.
My God. Snakes. Yeah, it's the whole Harrison Ford Indiana Jones thing. Yeah, snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? You know, I've screwed up my whole Jainist karma today. You know, I take spiders on pieces of paper and carry them outside into the grass and go on, little spider, go and eat... Snakes! Mm-mm. 5-foot black snake? No. No. Him. And I'm not going to make a hat band out of him either. But tonight is prayer meeting night. And there's something, I wouldn't, had this happened on a Thursday or a Monday, or I wouldn't have told you. But it's on prayer meeting night. And I get visited by the serpent. Yeah, you know, at some point I was expecting Agnes to come back with a slice of apple pie for me, and then I'd know, whoa. But no, like I said, tonight's edition is brought to you by the letter S, which is for snake, but it's also for stupid, and it's also for sarcasm. And, well, there's this blog out there. March Together for Life. You know how every now and then we'll get one of those just wacky stories that you have a hard time figuring, thinking it's got anything to do with reality? And I'll say something like, or you'll say something in the chat room like, or you'll call in or you'll email and say, you know, I know you're going to think this came from The Onion, but no, I've checked it out and it's real. There's a lot of people out there that don't know about The Onion.
Now, there's an article over at The Onion, and the name of that article, the headline is, "I'm totally psyched about this abortion." I know, I've heard all the arguments, abortion stops a beating heart, it's a child, not a choice, every life is precious. Well, I don't care what pro-lifers say, this is by Caroline Weber. I don't care what pro-lifers say, I am totally psyched for this abortion. Like I said, my decision to terminate my pregnancy isn't for lack of hearing the opposing view. I'm exposed to pro-life messages all the time. On billboards and magazines and on television, I certainly didn't miss that angry crowd of picketers shouting at me as I was happily skipping to the women's health clinic to make the appointment for my big day. Those pro-life activists made it pretty clear that, unlike me, they actually think abortion is bad and to be avoided. Are they nuts? Abortion is the best. Okay, so we get it, right? You get it, I get it. It's a joke. It's a spoof. It's sarcasm. It's satire. S is for satire. Not at March Together for Life. Murder without conscience. Here are some quotes from a pro-abortion person, Miss Caroline Weber, who wrote an article at The Onion online magazine. When referring to the killing of her child, she said, "I am totally psyched for this abortion. Those pro-life activists, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't until now that I was lucky enough to be pregnant with a child I had no means to support. And that's just going to be the best non-anesthetized invasive uterine surgery ever." Who does Miss Weber blame her abortion on? The pro-life movement! The funny thing is, I actually have the pro-life movement to thank for this opportunity. If my HMO wouldn't have bowed to their pressure not to cover oral contraceptives, I never would have gotten pregnant in the first place. Sorry, ma'am, if you hadn't had sex, you wouldn't have gotten pregnant. It's not the HMO's fault for not supporting your promiscuity while not married. How many times have we asked on this program? Are they evil geniuses, or are they deceptively stupid? Show of hands, please. Show of hands for deceptively stupid. Yeah, that's right, that's right. Marchtogether.blogspot.com, these freaks, and the thing is, this guy got called on it. He got 1,000 responses to his blog posting. Until he had to shut down comments on his blog. And the thing is, that if you go read the Onion article, there's nothing about her not being married. If you hadn't had sex, you wouldn't have gotten pregnant. It's not the HMO's fault for not supporting your promiscuity while not married. Miss Weber, you have killed your child. I'm guessing marchtogether.blogspot.com doesn't watch much TV either. This is all doggone it. You know, if we hadn't done the whole computer wipe, I'd have a great little sound clip for you now, from Galaxy Quest, where Tim Allen looks at the aliens and says, "You don't believe Gilligan's Island is real, do you?" And the alien says, "Those poor people." You know. I know they're the enemy, the right wing. But Lord, I feel a little bit about them sometimes like I felt about that snake. That thing just crawling along up, okay, well, here's a wall, go up the wall. Oh, look, here's a hole in the wall, go through the hole in the wall. Who are you? Just operating by nothing but spinal cord base going into the brain. No higher thought activity going on at all. Speak out against abortion. Don't just complain about it. Join. Oh, goodness gracious. Every baby you see from that moment on is going to wake you up to the realization that you killed your child! I wonder if they've got a blog posting about Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown all those times. It hurts sometimes. It just hurts. And there's... they posted her picture from the Onion article. And the guy got called on it, and he answers time after time. the liberal culture's just been exposed for its racist eugenist views, and you have to see the whole picture. God. On and on. You know, it's prayer meeting, so I guess this is the point where we say, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. Let's take a break and come back. Your phone calls are, of course, welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Minutes before the hour. I can only hope the folks at marchtogether.blogspot.com don't go to the Onion again. UN orders Wonka to submit to chocolate factory inspections. Let's go to the phones. Robert's been waiting and calling from Japan. Robert, thank you for calling. It's always good to share some time with you on our prayer meeting edition. Are you there, Robert? Did we lose Robert? Oh, no. Well, doggone it. I hate it when that happens. I wander past the Onion from time to time just to get a giggle. Kim Jong Il unfolds into giant robot. Look at this.
Oh, they're ruining the Power Rangers.
Yeah, it's one of the Power Ranger thingies. But these people are so very. Oh, that's a good picture. Responding to mounting pressure and increasingly confrontational rhetoric from the outside world, North Korean President Kim Jong-il unfolded into a 70-foot-tall, 62-ton giant robot Monday. Do we have to start putting parental notification, or not parental, but sort of ignorant fundamentalist notifications. Warning, fundamentalist, this is a joke. Well, talking about abortion is not funny to me. Even imaginary babies are babies just the same, just as embryos are life, as Karl Rove has already said. Oh, my aching back. Like I said, brought to you by sarcasm, stupid, and satire tonight. Brought to you by the letter S. I'm sorry we lost you, Robert. Sorry to make you wait through the break. I apologize. All right, enough. Now let's go to something slightly more realistic. Come on, it's prayer meeting night, so it's not going to be that realistic, but it's going to be fun. No, I don't want to go there yet. Oh, yeah, this is good. This is good. A conservative Christian leader says the organization known as the National Religious Campaign Against Torture, NERCAT, isn't saying anything about torture in places like North Korea, China, and Saudi Arabia, but instead is focusing its ire upon the U.S. and the Bush administration. Mark Tooley, he says he's looked at the declaration and doesn't say anything about tortures in places where it really occurs. Yeah, because it's not really torture if the U.S. and the U.K. are doing it. This campaign statement calls for an independent investigation into what it describes as severe human rights abuses at Guantanamo Bay. Of course, you know, we talked with Mr. Rose a couple of weeks ago, and we know what goes on there. Oh, Lord, yes, we know what goes on at Guantanamo. The spokesman says high-profile leaders like megachurch pastor Rick Warren and Ted Haggard of the National Association of Evangelicals have signed on, and that's a shame. They're repeating the same mistakes that mainline Protestant church leaders first started making. Oh, so shall I understand now that the fundies are into torture? Well, you know, I mean, they handle snakes and drink strychnine. What do you want? I think we've got Robert again. Robert, sorry we lost you the first time.
Problem. It was my fault. So much for using Skype.
Well, good morning to you.
Good morning. A little snake story, very quick of my own. I was down in the Philippines about 7 years ago under the 100 Islands. It's up on the northwest side of the northern island. And there's literally hundreds of small coral islands. So I'm traipsing around one of these coral islands with my Filipino in-laws, and they were ahead of me. And they were going through some deeper water, and there was this sea snake that showed up out of nowhere. And you know about sea snakes, right?
Which part?
Sea snakes are the second most dangerous snakes in the world.
Yeah, incredibly poisonous.
Right. So, you know, I'm somewhat intelligent, been to college. So I said, I'm leaving. And my Filipino in-laws literally jumped out of the water like a cannonball and hung on the coral reef, screaming in pain, of course, and saying, get a boat, get a boat, get a boat. So I managed to get back to the main island, and all the boat people were sleeping and playing cards. And then I told my wife and her sisters and all of that, and they just laughed. So, but I later learned that it was probably not a sea snake. It was just one of those nice, friendly coral snakes that hang around there, and they're endangered because they're too friendly. And people just, you know, go crazy.
Yeah.
Hacking them up. So your snake was just being friendly. I think you
had
a wrong attitude.
I did, but I couldn't find a way to get him out of he was in a corner that's very hard to reach.
Yeah.
And it was either leave him alone and expect him to go out the same way he came in, and I couldn't trust him to do that.
Yeah. Well, my wife has an incredible instinctive fear of snakes because mostly in the Philippines they're pretty dangerous.
Well, I was thinking, doesn't most of Asia have a problem with, what's it called, the Asian brown snake?
I don't know about that in Japan. I mean, all the snakes we have here are in little bottles and they're all dead. So, I've only seen one live snake since I've been here in 12 years.
There's not much room for there's so many humans, there's not a lot of room for snakes in Japan anymore, is there, Robert?
No. Now, see, that's a misconception, because in Japan there's lots of empty space. I mean, you have Tokyo, of course, and Saitama, which is all pretty crowded, and a couple of, five major cities here, and then you go out of the city, and it's all forest.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I lived in Hiroshima for my first year, and I could jog down to the west end of the station, and then right beyond the station was a huge forest. So I could be in the forest in, you know, a few minutes. And even here in Kitakyushu, which is a city made up of five major cities, actually, it's a metropolis, I could be in the forest in about 15 minutes.
That's kind of nice, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, Japan is very much of a forested, you know, kind of like mountainous, like Germany. Once you get out of the city, it's quite nice.
Well, that's... I guess you don't think of snakes in Japan so much, but I do. I remember seeing documentaries, or maybe it was Steve Irwin, and these brown snakes is what I think they're called, and they've got problems with them. Australia, Tasmania, the Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, all through there, because they're very invasive. They'll get up in the wheel wells of aircraft. There's a problem with them in Hawaii.
Right.
And they've got a really bad attitude. You know, I think the snake that landed on Peter's hood probably was one of those bad attitude snakes.
Right.
But well, this guy, you know, I felt bad about it, but, you know, the only way I could reach him was the tip of a broadsword. I'm not kidding.
Well, I hope your style was okay, because that's, you know, when you use a sword, it's important to have some style.
Oh yeah, and it was. I had a really good, you know, nice stern, firm, straight wrist, and you just poke. Yeah, very good style. And I've never even been to a Saldarm.
Yeah, the only time I ever came across a pit viper was in Israel when I was working on my kibbutz, and we had to pick oranges and grapefruits. And so I'm going up into the tree with my ladder, and sure enough, there it was. And I didn't really know how dangerous it was until my boss started hiding behind the orange crate and wouldn't go get it.
Yeah, thanks a million.
Yeah, thanks a million, guys. So it was me and another, I think, Scottish guy that had to go kill it. But anyway, I want to sort of talk about the family a little bit, because your Thursday night show was really interesting last week. And this is out of the New York Times, Sunday, February 19th, 2006, a little pop quiz on marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Op chart by Stephanie Kant. Okay, so true or false here, Bob? There are more long-term marriages today than in the past. True or false?
I'd say just based on population dynamics, true.
That is true. Although divorce rates have risen, death rates have fallen, so even more steeply, so more couples celebrate their 40th wedding anniversaries now than any time in the past. Divorce rates reached its highest more than 25 years ago. It has fallen more than 25% since 1981. Okay?
Okay.
How about next one? Americans have become much more tolerant of all sexual activity. True or false?
False.
False. Oh, very good. You must have read this article.
No, I haven't.
No, okay. Americans are now more tolerant of consenting sexual relations between unmarried adults than in the past. But a survey shows that a disapproval of adultery, sexual coercion, paid early in the morning, rape and sex with minors has increased over 30 years. In 1889, a girl could legally have consensus sex at age 10, 11, or 12 in half the states. And in Delaware, the age of consent was 7.
What?
There were many more prostitutes per capita in the 19th century in America than there were today, resulting in a high incidence of venereal disease among respectively married women infected by their husbands. Okay. Next one. The growth in the number of couples living together and having children without formal marriage ceremonies or licenses reflect a sharp break with centuries-old tradition.
False.
Yes, false. Okay, for the first 1,000 years of its existence, the church held that a marriage was only valid if a couple claimed they had exchanged a few words of consent, even if there were no witnesses or priests to officiate. It wasn't until 1754 did England require an issuance of a license for a marriage to be valid. Informal marriage and cohabitation was so common in the 19th century in America that one judge estimated that one-third of all children born to couples were not legally married.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, in the Anglo-Saxon or Anglo-American legal tradition, that's where you get the idea of common law marriage.
Right.
You shack up long enough, some rights are going and duties are going to attach to the couple.
Exactly, and you know, shacking up could be maybe 30 minutes or 2 hours, you know, or
30 minutes, 2 hours, or 20 years.
20 years, right? Okay, two more here.
Okay, that's fine.
American women have more positive attitudes toward marriage than Japanese women do.
False.
Nope, true.
Oh.
You dropped it on the stereotypes there. Okay.
Okay, busted.
Schoolgirls around the world were asked whether they were agreed with the statement that everyone needed to be married. 3/4 of American schoolgirls agreed, but in Japan, get this, 88% of schoolgirls disagreed. Marriage is old hat now. No one's getting married in Japan now. We have 50% of all women in their 30s, middle 30s, that are still single.
It's not like it's not a crisis, is it?
No. I mean, some of them kind of a latent desire if they see little children and something like that. But they look at Japanese men and they go, "Oh my God, I don't think so."
Just because they know that, you know, after the honeymoon, if there's a honeymoon, after that they don't see him anymore for 50 years.
Yeah, exactly right. In South Korea, there's actually a divorce court in the airport, so when the couple come back from their honeymoon, they can easily get divorced because, you know.
Boy, I thought we had it down to a science with Vegas and the wedding chapels.
No. You guys are, I hate to say it, you're often behind the ball here.
Well, we live behind the curve, but we just don't have any media to let us know.
Right. Okay, last one here. Born-again Christians are just as likely to divorce as more secular Americans.
False. They're more likely to divorce.
True. I mean, 35% of born-again Christians in this country have divorced. Almost the same as 35% of atheists and agnostics. 23% of born-again Christians have divorced twice. Among Pentecostals, the divorce rate is more than 40%.
Well, have you seen the hairdos?
And the region with the highest divorce rate is the Bible Belt.
Absolutely. Lowest divorce rate in the United States, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, I think when women are kind of regulated to the kitchen and they're into this little role, it gets kind of boring after a while.
Well, that and, you know, there's a lot of that really hateful Pauline stuff about, you know, women shut up if you've got any questions. Wait till you get home from church and ask your husband and don't wear your hair in a French twist and thou shalt not wear makeup by anybody but Mary Kay, you know.
Right. I mean, it's a shame that he kind of ended up defining, really shaping mostly Christianity. I mean.
Well, and it is.
Yeah,
that's why I kind of stop at Luke when I go into the New Testament. My New Testament ends at Luke.
Right. So, but you know, it's a very interesting article. I mean, definitely want to check out and show conservatives, because the conservatives have a tendency to kind of romanticize the past. And if we can only go back to the 18th century, or
well, that's why this is all so much poppycock, Robert, about the institution of marriage being the core and the very ground upon which this nation was flourished. Amen. Hallelujah. That's just these people, and that's the ongoing dilemma for me, Robert. Are they overtly, deliberately stupid, or are they deliberately duplicitous?
Right.
Well, it's the romanticized, and the Japanese women aren't buying into that anymore. They realize they can lead very happy lives without having to cook and clean and do everything for the band, and the men just don't seem to get it. They don't realize that they have to start helping out with the women and get cooking and the cleaning and. You know, and so
there's got to be a little division of labor. Yeah. Now, are Japanese women in the workforce now? These 30 somethings that aren't married?
They're all working. Yeah, so they're all making some money. Not a whole lot. But that's another issue I can get onto. But
yeah, that's wage inequity.
Yeah, basically, they're all forced to still live with their parents. I mean, most of them, all my secretaries, they only leave the house when they get married. So, which kind of blows me away, but I said, why don't you just live, you know, have roommates and stuff like that, but they don't want to do that.
Well, there's still some family structure, I imagine, and there's value to that, but the value judgment that's made on hitching one's star to somebody who's going to be work-obsessed and keel over with a coronary at 62 or 52 or whatever.
Well, I was talking to one of my Japanese colleagues yesterday. I was having lunch with her, and... she was telling me her husband, who lives over in Gunma Prefecture, which is way above Tokyo, he's a systems engineer, but he's in this job for, selling cars, strangely enough, I don't know. And he only has 3 days off per month. I mean, no, he works all Saturday and Sunday, and the only days off are 3 days a month.
That's inhumane.
Yeah, yeah. So he's getting burnout. He's, what should I do with my life? But... I said, tell him to come over and start his own company, and, you know, even if he makes a little bit, it's better than what he's doing now. And but they're so afraid of risk, trying something new. It's been bred into them by the company. Don't try something new, because if you did, then you'd leave the company, and, you know. But, yeah, and then my Japanese teacher was telling me that her son, you know, he starts work at 7 o'clock, comes home at 1 o'clock. One of my students I just met, we put out the top of the line engineers from our university, or mm-hmm. a certain old Meiji era university, and he was kind of bragging. I got a job at a racing car company as a mechanical engineer, and I said, "What time do you start? 6 o'clock. What time do you finish? 2 a.m." And I said, "No, you mean 2 p.m. No, no, 2 a.m." He said. So, and this is
well, young people with a can kind of do that, Robert.
Yeah, for about 5 or 6, 10 years, and then that's it, you know.
Right.
Right, and then so much for your society, because you're not going to have families being built, you know.
To go back to the women you're describing, you know, they live at home, but you know, are they working these 14-16 hour days as well?
Yes. I mean, I had one secretary that was transferred to the administration section of my university. We only have 6,000 people, Bob. And we're not talking 60,000. And she went home at 1 o'clock in the morning. I would say, Satoko, what are you doing? And what could you be doing to 1 o'clock? There's not that much you could do here. But, you know, there's some old man there, the boss, who doesn't have a life, and he doesn't want any other people to have a life, too. And that's what this is, the whole country's built on. So... This is what's going to happen in the States. They're going to make jobs just as scarce as they were in Reagan's years, and I was forced to work 93-hour weeks because there were simply no other jobs. It was either that or the Army. So,
well, I fear that is where we're going, and of course, I've got a story in the stack here for later this evening about the assault on, the National Labor Relations Board here in the U.S., Robert, has decided that it wants to break the nurses' unions.
Oh, I saw that. Right. Because they're going to make everyone supervisors, and once you're a supervisor, then we can work into
them. Yeah, because if the RN says, go take the temperature in room 312 to the LPN, then she's supervising the LPN. But if the LPN says to the CNA, the certified nursing assistant, you know, take the bedpan she's supervising the...
Right,
and you got to wonder who the CNAs are going to be supervising, because this isn't about streamlining management practice or making patients feel better. This is about busting their union and cutting their wages and being able to do with them as they please.
Right. And if you do this long enough, and you will breed a generation like what we have here now, is people who don't realize that they're getting worked into the ground.
And it's normal practice. And so my student didn't see anything wrong with it at all.
And yet it's so dramatically different from what I understand of factory workers in Germany.
Yeah.
Sweden.
Right. I mean, I studied German away when I was back in 23. I got out of Florida, out of this private school hell that I was in. And I mean, it was hell. And got to Germany. They had two-hour lunches in Bavaria. Everyone stopped at work at 12 and didn't start work until 2, and then from 2 to 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, bam, you were gone.
And, well, you know, the Spanish notion, and it's in Italy as well, the notion of the siesta. You know,
yeah,
knock off from noon to 2, catch a nap, have lunch, take a walk with your wife or your... You know, but, you know, have some valuable time in the middle of the day.
Exactly. Well, because, I mean, if you have a two-hour lunch, that changes your whole culture of your society. Because you can go out and watch a movie, you can go to a museum, you can read a book from the library, and you come back completely refreshed. And it's like, you're back in the morning. You're ready to go raring for another 4 more hours instead of exhausted and burnt out. So it was very smart for the companies to actually do this. And smart for society.
Well, and I don't understand why that can't be figured out here. I mean, you've got a few enlightened companies that do that kind of thing. I think there's a nap room at Google headquarters.
Uh-huh.
But that model, you certainly can't argue that model is catching on as any sort of trend in American business.
No, they'll fight it. And it's not about profits. It's just about control from what I've now, you know, think about it. And they just don't want people to be happy because they're not happy. So,
and happy people might look at their circumstances, and it extends all over the United States, Robert.
Right.
It's the same reason that the coal industry, as I've noted, the coal industry doesn't want other industry coming into West Virginia, because if they do, people might look up and say, hey, we don't have to have our houses covered in filth every day. There's other people that might like to do business here that doesn't want to destroy us.
Exactly, right. So, I mean, companies hate competition at the end of the day, because if they had to actually compete with, you know, wages or prices, they would go out, you know, go crazy.
Or if they have to compete with fundamental principles of humane treatment.
Exactly, right.
Well, Robert, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, too.
Have yourself a wonderful morning.
Okay, you too.
And bid the students my best wishes, please.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
What was the report on QNN earlier that a report has said that up to a quarter of the American workforce could telecommute for its entire work week? Did you catch that? Yeah, you'll probably get another chance. Of course, if you do something like that, you know, the boss, the company, the whatever, will find, well, you know, you don't need as much money. I mean, you're not buying gasoline or anything now, so, you know, we can pay you less. I don't know. We may have to start PETH, people for the ethical treatment of humans. I don't think it's a half bad idea. It might be a half good one. Jump in the conversation. It's prayer meeting. I mean, you know, clap your hands, pray, sing hallelujah. Come on, get happy. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. 8 Israelis and 3 Lebanese have reportedly been killed as Israel continues launching airstrikes and military raids into southern Lebanon. The offensive was launched after guerrillas killed 8 Israeli soldiers and abducted 2 others earlier today. At the United Nations, world powers agreed today to send Iran to the Security Council over its nuclear program. That could lead to sanctions, although a resolution will likely be issued first. The permanent members of the Security Council say Iran has had enough time to consider a package of incentives aimed at stopping the program. Also at the UN, China and Russia have introduced their own resolution about North Korea's recent missile launches, but it differs from the Japanese resolution in that it does not call for sanctions. Chinese officials say that would only exacerbate the situation and possibly lead to further instability. In India, a government official is demanding that Pakistan break apart all terrorist groups on its land. That comes after yesterday's bombings, which authorities now say killed 200 people. No one has claimed responsibility for the attacks, but Indian officials suspect a militant group from Kashmir. In Iraq today, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld held a joint news conference with U.S. General George Casey during an unannounced visit. Casey said he believes sectarian violence is now a larger threat than al-Qaeda. Nearly 30 people died today in attacks. President Bush has arrived in Europe, where he will meet with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Mr. Bush will stay there until Friday, when he leaves for this weekend's G8 summit in Russia. On Capitol Hill, senators will vote this month on a bill that would allow oil drilling in 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. Today, they agreed to ban drilling within 125 miles of Florida's coast until the year 2022. In California's Yucca Valley, a wildfire has destroyed 30 buildings. Dozens of people have been evacuated as firefighters continue battling the blaze. In Chicago, authorities have reopened a subway that was shut down yesterday after a fire. More than 150 people were injured in the incident. Law enforcement officials say that the fire appears to have been an accident. The U.S. government has a new way of alerting the public to emergencies through their cell phones and computers. The system is based on one built during the Cold War era and involves the participation of broadcast media. It's expected to be available nationally at the end of next year. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Funeral services were held today for former Enron founder Kenneth Lay. He was remembered as a devout Christian and family man. The FDA has approved a single pill to replace the three-pill-a-day regimen for those infected with HIV and AIDS. Gilead Sciences expects to make the pill, a triple A, available within 1 week. The U.S. Army is calling for government contract bids in Iraq and other areas. Halliburton previously held an exclusive multi-million-dollar contract with the Pentagon. Citgo Petroleum is reportedly saying it will no longer sell gas to nearly 2,000 stations across the United States. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez says Citgo's business amounts to a subsidy for the U.S. economy. The federal government says higher oil prices raised the U.S. trade deficit in May. The trade gap now stands at nearly $64 billion. Newspaper publishing company Gannett is reporting a more than 8% drop in its quarterly profit. A slow British market and loss of ad revenues are blamed. It was a record year for tribal casinos, which pulled in $22.6 billion in gambling revenue. That's double the take in Nevada. Light sweet crude settled at $74.95 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 122 points at 11,103. NASDAQ down 39 at 2090. S&P 500 down 14 at 1259. You can hear more at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then. 4 minutes past the hour.
And I want to share a couple of emails with you. It's one of the reasons I enjoy doing this program so much. Because there is, contrary to what we are told, there's a willingness and a hunger out there to examine our existence, the whys and wherefores of. And so I got an email from a new friend who goes by the name of Timberwolf. And Timberwolf writes, "The Christian right has already been left behind." After our I had the conversation the other night about the kill everything in sight video game that's being pushed by the religion industry. Timberwolf says, "I like a quote I saw on a website or a blog which said, 'Kiss my left behind,' as well as the bumper sticker which said, 'The rapture is not an exit strategy.' But seriously, as a self-directed student of theology, I pondered the whole end times thing at great length. First, the revelation of John," he writes, "the most oft-quoted source for end-times believers, was simply an early encrypted message from one writer to others in a Christian-unfriendly society, much like the fish symbol which early Christians made in the dirt to identify each other as friendly or unfriendly. Another thing which strikes the observant reader of the Bible is what Peter said about the last days in the second chapter of the book of Acts. This is known as the Pentecost moment." Yep. Verse 14, "But Peter, standing up with the 11, lifted up his voice and said unto them, 'Ye men of Judea, and all ye that dwell at Jerusalem, be this known unto you, and hearken unto my words. For these are not drunken, as ye suppose, seeing it is but the third hour of the day." He's trying to tell them that, no, they hadn't just had a tequila sunrise party. "But this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel," emphasis on the word "is." And then he quotes the prophet Joel, saying, "And it shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams," so forth. In other words, Peter says they're living in the end times, right then, right there. It's not something that's off in the future. It is upon them as he speaks. Our correspondent says, "It is peculiar to me, at least, that this is one of the few scriptures which fundamentalists do not believe literally. So evidently, the end times started 2,000 years ago and is even ongoing today. So much for the rapture." A number of years ago, I was invited by Martin Bell, an Episcopal priest and author of a great book called The Way of the Wolf, to give a sermon. It went something like this. The Old Testament foretold of a Messiah, most expressly in the book of Isaiah. God would send someone. At the time of Jesus, the expectation was that God would send a warrior king to overthrow the Roman oppressors. God sent instead Jesus. Rather, Jesus overthrew the ideas that Jews had held, which in turn oppressed them. So God sent a Messiah who was a complete contradiction to that which was expected. It seems to me that this is exactly how God works. It is just a personal observation. But if God truly operates in this way, then we might ask, what do we expect of the second coming of Jesus? This is where it gets good. Certainly we expect a triumphant Jesus returning with most of the glory of God. Perhaps he is 900 feet tall, and there are eardrum-shattering trumpet blasts coming from the clouds. This is all good and well, but what if God acts as he did the first time around? What if he sends what we least expect? At this point in time, I pose the question, what or who is it that you least expect Jesus to come back as? Responses to the question are often brilliant and fun. Least expect Jesus to come back as a female, an incarcerated murderer, a black man, a dolphin. Republican. And this is the part, yeah. I propose that what you least expect Jesus to come back as is you. Feel the rapture yet? And when I read that, I thought, you know, I got to share this. Because, well, you know, my background, I grew up reading science fiction and things like that. And that statement that Valentine Michael Smith makes repeatedly, in Robert Heinlein's A Stranger in a Strange Land. When he looks innocently at another human being and says, "Thou art God." How, if there is a God, how can you and I not be it? I mean, even the literalists, you know, made in his own image. Right? You know, I mean, so apparently there's a God up there that looks like me. Poor God. There's a God up there that looks like Agnes. Lucky God. I mean, I'm being a little bit flip, but, you know, we reserve these Wednesday evenings for pondering this kind of stuff and juxtaposing these inquiries against the kind of inquiries we get from the religion industry. The false prophets, the antichrists, the ones who would make our lives worse. You know, as Robert so eloquently pointed out, the traditional marriage that these freaks want to reinstate in our country simply didn't exist. It didn't exist. You want to know why Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, said what he said about divorce? I mean, he said a lot of things about how you treat the poor and the least among us. But he also mentioned divorce. Because he lived in a society in which a young Jewish man, 18 years old, unmarried, was a freak. It was a marriage-heavy society because it was procreation-heavy. And because men did the traditional so-called earning, while women did the traditional so-called work. So it's not surprising to find Yeshua speaking out against divorce in his era, because for a man to abandon his wife in most instances in that time was a death sentence upon that woman, because she had no means independently to survive. So would we find that surprising to find a person of incredible, almost, well, superhuman compassion saying, "Guys, if you marry her, you stay with her. You can't bail out on her and let her go starve and die just because she served you a cold cup of latte. It's a commitment." So I'm not at all surprised by that stance. But in a culture 2,000 years later, where while there's a whole lot of inequality, yet wage inequality, employment inequality between men and women, a divorce does not necessarily mean a death sentence to the wife. I'm not, you know, it's a different era. But when you look at the level of thought that went into that email, and I found myself wandering. I found myself sitting and thinking about that line. The person you least expect Jesus to come back is you. That's world changing. That's life changing. You know, I've said on a number of times, where's the proof that Jesus didn't come back as Gandhi? Where's the proof that he didn't come back as Martin Luther King? Where's the proof? There is no proof. The same spirit. It's the same spirit. And you couple that up with the idea, thou art God? But see, if you take something like that and you run with it, and you live with it, you're gonna run headlong into society. and it's gonna be an uncomfortable collision. Because again, if the God spark is in you, and it's in your neighbor, it's gonna make hatred pretty much impossible. If we recognize that spark of the so-called divine in all of us, then everybody who gets up and goes to work is naturally going to have an affinity for his fellow worker, for instance. And the next thing you know, you're going to have a union. You're going to have an association. You're going to have people working not just for themselves and for the working day, but for their neighbor. And may I submit that terrifies the people who write the paychecks more than any communist revolution or any terrorist or any Osama or Zarqawi. The idea of people who treat each other like human beings, people for the ethical treatment of humans, remember? That idea is more terrifying to an employer than virtually any other. Because discord is the poisonous tree by which the giant corporatists succeed. Oh boy, I hope I'm not going to start singing the Internationale anytime soon. But I hope there's some sense in that. I had a discussion not too long back, and I said, following the way of Yeshua is a much more complex undertaking than most people. You know, oh, look, I ate the cracker, I drank the wine, I got the Jesus meat and the Jesus blood in me, I can go out and support a guy who wants to kill 100,000 people. Cool! It really, really, really doesn't work that way. There has to be soul-searching involved. There has to be deep, deep, abiding introspection. There, I mean, we're talking about the kind of self-examination that's discussed in 12-step programs. In order for you to live that life and walk that walk. Now, the denomination from which I'm still recovering says that, hey, look, you know, Bob, we stuck you in the water, we pulled you up, you didn't drown. You get the pearly gates. Magic. It's magic. And I don't believe in magic. Or should I say that as a person who is rational and fact-based, I do not know that magic exists. I don't criticize anyone who does or well, you know, that poor fellow, the only American soldier who died, who has been killed in the war, and he was a Wiccan, and the Pentagon won't allow him to have a pentacle on his memorial stone. You know, what kind of bigotry is that? I don't criticize anyone for any way that they believe, but I do know that in any belief system, if you're not working at it, it's not working for you. Jesus, I'm a little worried here. I'm afraid the organ music's going to start and somebody's going to start passing a hat or something. I didn't mean for it to turn into this. We will. We'll take a break. I got another email, another very, 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 very introspective spiritual email for you. I'll share that one with you, too. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When they called and said you had to go, I tried to be strong and understand. Now that you're there, I wait every day for someone. I just want you safe and by my side. No, it's not okay that someone can send you away to fight for the greed of just a few. It's time for all of us to change the way we are. It's time to put an end to
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Ready?
Not.
Uh-uh. Ready?
Not.
Your body's been ready for quite some time.
Not.
Ready.
But not your mind.
Ready?
Not.
Ready.
No way.
You have lots to do before you have a baby. But don't forget to take folic acid today and every day to prevent birth defects one special day. So when all of you is ready, that baby of yours will be ready to take on the world.
Ready?
Not.
Ready.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Past. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Agnes loves this music because the guy in it, this is what the theme from Angel or something. Yeah, and Agnes gets all Bobby Soxer over the lead character, David Baree Nazan or Nad Nazan, however you pronounce his last name. Yeah, it's the cello music. We understand, dear. It's the cello music. I read Playboy for the articles.
I really do love the cello.
Yeah, okay. So this and this little bit of spirituality came in from our friend Paul. He's taken to answering questions because he's a very well-educated individual, apparently. Answering questions on Yahoo Answers. And this was a question about original sin or the presence of evil in the world. You know, see, so much of America, well, I wonder who the next American Idol will be. But I got people listening to this program who wonder, why is there evil in the world? You know, I'm thinking the world is more likely to change by virtue of people trying to figure out why there's evil in the world as to whether or not You know, some cranky guy is, and Paula Abdul's having it with a, and, but you know what I mean. So the presence of evil in the world, because we live in a world that allows us to separate ourselves from God, and many people choose to do so. Even if you don't take it literally, the story of Adam and Eve's exile from the Garden of Eden is instructive. Eden is instructive. Like Joni Mitchell says in the song Woodstock, we are stardust, we are golden, we are billion-year-old carbon, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. God made us and loved us enough to give us free will, including the will to turn away from him if we so choose, but the price of the choice for doing so is to live separate from him, which exposes us to the possibilities of sin, evil, and hatred. Unless we commend ourselves to God, we are adrift and subject to our own whims and the wills and whims of others, and also the harsh, unthinking fact of nature in a material world. God made matter and put us in the material world. Again, like the song says, we are spirits in the material world. Thank you, Sting and René Descartes. I think that's the first time I've ever seen Sting and René Descartes in the same... You guys are amazing. Although we are of God, because we are made of matter, we also need to possess and consume matter in order to sustain this material existence in which we find ourselves. This gives rise to an intense desire for material things which express themselves in, ironically enough, the seven deadly sins: lust, greed, gluttony, sloth, anger, envy, and pride or vanity. We compete for these things with each other, which leads us, in worst-case scenarios, to murder and war. If you think about it, the material deadly sins have a form of religious rejection. For example, many religious people practice fasting, celibacy, selflessness, and charity. St. Thomas Aquinas teaches us that God is perfect and divine in part because his nature is non-material or immaterial, above the material needs and desires, and because we are made in his image, we are capable of being above those things too if we choose to commend ourselves to him. Man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thus, in seeking reunion with God, we can rise above these things too, and presumably are assured that he will see to our needs. Now, here's the good part. This is the modern take on original sin and the exile from Eden, and is called the sin of the broken world theory. God made the world as a place for us to be with him. We broke the world through our God-given exercise of free will. Jesus is the Savior of the world, and by living in and through him and his teachings, we can mend, heal, or fix the broken world and live with God again, one person at a time. Note, there is no need to ascribe any of this to Satan or demons or anything like that. Human beings are sufficient. Pay attention. Human beings are sufficient to explain all of the evil in the world. Thou art God? Yeah, thou art also might be somebody else, too, if you're not careful. But again, slide, DiMaggio, slide. I worry about concepts like sin, though, because, well, what did we talked about James Dobson a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Or a week ago? So, you know, it all flies together after a while. This kid was wailing in tears at the age of 3, marching down to the altar where his father was standing up and exhorting the sinners to come forth and confess and you know, the whole thing. And a 3-year-old child has been so thoroughly hammered with this religious poison that he thinks he is a bad person. A 3-year-old. That's child abuse at some level, but that 3-year-old who thought he was bad when he was 3 and thereafter that he could do no wrong because he had been washed in the blood grows up to be James Dobson and grows up to support things like slaughter and genocide and child abuse and tells daddies to flash their boys in the shower and God knows what he's telling the mommies in the new book. So I worry about getting overwrought with ideas of so-called sin, because in contemplating it, I think it's very likely that we come quite close to inventing it.
So, okay, that's the sermonette part of the program. I apologize. I don't mean to go down this road, because I know some people just go, oh, Jesus, he's talking about religion. Because it's easy for us to poke a sharp stick at the religion industry. I mean, how many headlines shall we go over? Let's see. There's the freak who doesn't want churches talking about Americans doing torture. Christian radio host holding Texas grocery chain accountable. That's right. There's a grocery store in San Antonio, Texas, that sells groceries to gay people, and a Texas radio right-wing host doesn't like the fact that they're selling food to the queers. Or letting the gays know that they sell food to them. Now, I'm not kidding. Maybe this one's worth taking a look at, because you want sin, there's sin. You want hate, there's hate. You want bigotry, there's bigotry. You want apartheid in the United States, there is apartheid in the United States. And somebody has got, because the websites where I go and find these stories, they put them out there proud of these stories, you understand. I, on the other hand, point them out as examples of hate and vicious bigotry. So, yeah, maybe we will talk about this. And, oh, look, dear leader's going to Germany. Hey, he's been to Austria. Yeah, I wonder if the same thing that happened in Austria is going to happen in Germany. We'll get to it, I promise. The phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, head on. Bob@headonradio.com is the email address. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO plans a civil disobedience action at the National Labor Relations Board in Washington today. Hundreds of nurses, construction workers, miners, and others will march on the NLRB to protest the Kentucky River case, where the NLRB is expected to broaden the definition of supervisory workers, taking away union rights for hundreds of thousands of workers. AFL-CIO activists plan to go to jail for justice at today's protest.
Hearings continued in bankruptcy court Tuesday concerning a request by ComAir to throw out contracts with flight attendants. The airline says that it has been unable to bid successfully against other carriers for future routes due to the uncertainty surrounding the contracts and the future of the airline. Both sides say they are open for negotiations. The flight attendants are calling ComAir's cuts excessive. The airline is seeking $7.9 million in givebacks, while the union is only willing to offer $6.2 million. The airline has already reached agreements with unions representing pilots and mechanics, but that $27.2 million in cuts is now contingent on whatever happens with the flight attendants. The hearings will continue on Friday. A ruling against the flight attendants could result in a further appeal to the U.S. District Court.
The National Education Association is committed to a major effort to reform the federal No Child Left Behind law, with stepped-up lobbying and a significant elections year push at the polls this November. NEA President Reg Weaver says the teachers' union has a positive agenda for education excellence, but also wants to make sure that serious failings in No Child Left Behind are addressed.
There are about 130 congresspeople on both sides of the aisle who have put forth about 34 pieces of legislation that speaks to some kind of change in No Child Left Behind. About 86 groups, organizations have signed on to a letter that speaks to change. And so the question, in my mind, is not if the law should be changed, but when.
Workers for high-end apparel company Hugo Boss are fighting for a fair contract. The workers at a Savannah, Georgia distribution center are currently working without a contract and earn on average $7.63 per hour and have no pensions. Represented by Unite Here, the workers have only been offered a raise of 25 cents per year, with the company retracting a retroactive wage proposal. The company reported net profits of over $120 million in 2005. Here is today's economic report. While the president touts a reduction in the budget deficit, the Wall Street Journal fires back that the truth is the deficit will rise by more than $40 billion by 2007. The paper received its numbers from a projection issued by the White House Office of Management and Budget. The deficit is down to $296 billion, thanks in part to tax cuts spurring temporary economic growth. But the OMB's director says it isn't enough to solve the long-term fiscal challenges.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Crash Test Dummies would be the most popular band on earth. Most they and possibly Al Stewart, the two most literate songwriters I think I've ever heard. Well, I mean, I know there's others. What about Bob Dylan? Okay, Bob Dylan. But somehow or another, that stuff just speaks to me. But anyway, let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Oh, hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good. You?
A little sleepy, but that's okay. I nod in and out sometimes. You know how it is.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
No, this is your prayer meeting night, right?
Yes.
But I was just thinking a great song if you could get it. Remember that movie, Walk on the Wild Side?
Yes.
You remember the theme song from it?
No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about the song Walk on the Wild Side. I'm thinking about Lou Reed.
No, I'm afraid Lou had to hit the mess that I was playing. But anyway, this was movie was made in 62. Had Lawrence Harvey, Kathy Keene, Barbara Stanwyck. It's a wonderful movie. And the theme song from that movie, it's a vocal. It's just incredible. If you can Google it up, it would be, or find it somehow, it would be incredible. Really.
Okay, so it would be the main title from Walk on the Wild Side, 1962.
Right. Edward Dimitri was the, as a matter of fact, it was the director. In 62, it got the Academy Award for the best soundtrack and lead theme. It did. Really good. I don't know what you were fixing to get into, but I wanted to ask you, what do you think of, and this is maybe away from what you were talking about, of our friend in North Korea, Kim Jong-il?
What do I think about him?
Yeah.
I think he's probably insane. I think it's clear that he's a really rotten member of the human race. Anybody that would let as many people starve as he does among his people certainly has no right to be included in the civilized march of nations.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I do, really.
I think Tony Snow was absolutely out of his mind yesterday when he made fun of Bill Clinton for holding the North Koreans or keeping them back from nuclear proliferation during his administration. Did you run across that one?
Oh, I never watched Fox, Bob. I mean, I have all my TV.
No, I'm talking about White House spokesman Tony Snow. He's away from Fox now. He replaced slithering Scotty McClellan.
So what did he say? He would assent to allowing Kim Jong to have.
I'm looking for it here in yesterday's stack just to see if I can run across. Yeah, he just made some sort of snide, catty, snotty comments about Bill Clinton and our efforts to avoid nuclear proliferation on the part of North Korea during the Clinton administration.
Well, I thought that Madeleine Albright and people were in serious talks with him about that when the Clinton administration ended, weren't they?
That's the whole thing. We had him in a box. He was behaving himself. But not according to Tony Snow. According to Tony Snow, Clinton just gave away the farm to Kim Jong Il, which is nothing but an unmitigated lie. But of course, that's what they're good at.
Well, yeah, I was just to say that's one of their specialties.
You know, do I want to nuke North Korea? No, because I don't believe in killing several million people to get one. I don't SWAT flies with claw hammers.
I do. But, you know, the thing that has caused me some consternation is exactly what effect is this going to have upon Japan?
Well, Japan is already, and I should have asked Robert about it while he was calling from Japan. Japan is talking about preemptive strikes. If they start fueling a missile or something, Japan says that it has the right to go and get them.
Now, the Japanese Constitution, I think, forbids like a standing army or something like that, or anything.
No, it forbids an offensive army.
Uh huh.
I mean, the JDF most certainly exists. It's a professional army. It's a lifetime army.
Well, does Japan have the capability of taking him out like that?
Sure.
With a nuclear weapon, or
no, we haven't let them have nukes. But Japan certainly has the capability of attacking North Korea, and you see that's kind of the problem. This whole preemptive war idea is an invention of dear leaders. That's the Bush doctrine.
But you know, if you took out Kim Jong Il, or if that society collapsed over there in North Korea, you would have a flood of people. One would go north, one would go south, and there would go the neighborhood, literally, wouldn't it? That's the thing?
Yeah. And what Tony Snow said yesterday, our friend Pleiku in the chat room reminded me, Tony Snow that Clinton said that Clinton offered Kim Jong-il flowers and chocolates and breeder reactors. And we see how that worked. But the fact of the matter is that's just a lie, because North Korea only ratcheted up its nuclear weapons program after the doofus at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue came out and named North Korea part of the tricycle of evil or whatever. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. It appears as though that this posturing of Kim Jong-il just might allow him to have his way.
Well, exactly, because you see, Kim Jong-il, we walk around, oh, yeah, he's crazy. He wears platform shoes. He must be insane.
Face it like a fox.
Well, yeah, but he understands. You know, if you're weak and you say, look, we have no ability to harm you, it's a guarantee that George Bush will try to invade you. On the other hand, if you say, you know, we're armed to the teeth and we will fight you to the last man and, you know, we can make it as nasty for you as we want, well, George Bush, being a coward, Jim, George Bush isn't going to fool with that person.
Well, not to mention that it's all of his military assets, so that's the breaking point.
Right, and you know, the Korean Peninsula is such that, what is that, the 38th parallel?
Yeah, very so.
It's worth remembering that Seoul is a stone's throw south of that.
He's got a million men under arms, plus he has around 11,000 artillery pieces that are aimed at Seoul. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And he can overrun the border in almost no time flat, and the next thing you know, we're contemplating a brand new Incheon. Because we don't, I mean, the forces that we have on the North Korean border are token forces only.
40,000 men.
Yeah, they'd be overrun in a minute. That's a rounding error compared to the North Korean army. And there's a point at which, it's like Grant attacking the southern lines. There's a point at which there's just a mathematical simplicity of numbers. If you have X and the other guy's got one half X, you're going to win.
Well, there we go, Korea, period. And, you know, because I honestly think that what I'm trying, I guess the point I'm trying to drive at is that the whole Korean Peninsula would turn into another Balkan situation a la June 1914.
Sure. The thing could set off the entire Asian Rim.
And, of course, now Russia and China are not going to do anything you think that they're going to allow him to do anything like that? Do you think they would intervene?
Well, there's a handshake agreement with the Russians right now, Jim, because nobody's really paying much attention to it, but most of the ideas of democracy in Russia are dying, if not dead.
Yeah, you know, the apple can't fall very far from the tree, because I remember the environment and the job that Mr. Putin had before he became president. His role in the KGB, so I mean,
yeah, the apparatchiks are back, the oligarchs are back, and Putin, you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and his KGB roots are showing. Did you know, for instance, I heard our friend Mark Levine mention this earlier today, Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, those are all dead in Russia now. Signals not being allowed to get in.
Oh, they're being jammed?
Yep.
VOA and all that stuff?
Yep.
Well, it looks like things are sort of going to go back to what they used to be, aren't they?
I really hope not. I mean, I think there's a chance. So much, Jim, so very much rides on these 2006 congressional elections. Because the only real power that can stop George Bush is a determined, self-empowering Congress. And they can put the brakes on him in a minute, whether it be through a Democratic House with the purse strings, or a bill of impeachment, or a Senate that refuses to confirm any more of his freaks. You know, that's the a self-aware, activist, Democratic Congress is about, and I'm not just talking about the United States, Jim. I'm talking about the whole cotton-picking world. A Democratic Congress just may be the last best hope on earth.
Well, I think that would definitely pave the way for what I would like to call a bill of divorcement as far as George is concerned, you know.
Yeah, I prefer a bill of impeachment, but I understand your meaning.
Yeah, well, it's like I told Bruce Burks this afternoon when I, you know, the difference between Bruce and me is, you know, with me the situation was Bruce the situation. I said, Bruce, I said, the situation is serious but not hopeless, but with me it's hopeless but not serious. I almost got to the point that I just kind of like to say, you know, no matter which way we go, something nasty is going to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm not quite that fatalistic, Jim. I have to believe that change can be effected. I have to believe that this nation is worth saving. John, I heard an interview between John Dean and Keith Olbermann, and John Dean said, we are not quite a fascist nation yet. but we are perilously close. And there's only, and you know, it, one has to actively pull back from the abyss, because it's very easy to be drawn back in or drawn into it.
It would appear that way. It would appear that the alien faith is true, and you know that sort of thing. It won't be as overt if what happened in Germany, but.
Oh, no, no, no. That's the thing. Americans, as long as nobody shows up with nifty-looking black suits, nobody's going to think that they're being fascist. It never occurred to middle America that a fascist can wear blue jeans.
Well, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
Got a program going. As far as if Russia were to go back to where it was, say, before 1991... and become a strong military power again the way it was before the Cold War ended. What impact do you think that would have upon the world? Do you think that would create a more stable world? If they could reabsorb their territories and recontrol what they had before?
Well, I hate to, Jim, I hate to reject your premise, but Russia can't go back to its previous state because it doesn't have its Soviet satellites to provide it the wherewithal to do so. What it can do, however, is provide a profound destabilizing influence in reinvigorating what used to be referred to as the Great Game, you know, what goes on in Iran and Afghanistan. We don't want a hostile Russia.
No, I wouldn't like to have that either, but I mean, that would be I just can't see if Mr. Putin has his way, and if it continues to go the way it's going, how long would it be take for them to reacquire those satellites and things, you know?
I don't think they've got the military to pull it off. They're too busy with they're too busy with the Chechens, among other people. Jim, we got to roll on. Thank you for some very thought provoking questions. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Have a good evening.
Thank you. Good night now.
Bye now. And a quick break, and when we come back, more of your calls. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob. This is Head On.
Major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'd be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn the CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter. A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Quick update from email. Our buddy Andy in the UK writes in with regard to North Korea and Seoul. He says, I just learned this weekend in the Sunday Times that, and this is a chilling statistic, in the Sunday Times that North Korea can hit Seoul with 500,000 artillery shells, wait for it, per hour, from the second that war resumes. Remember, there's no peace treaty. This is a cessation of hostilities. Hostilities still exist with North Korea. Andy says, remember, Bush doesn't need support or legitimacy for war on North Korea because you're still at war, technically. He also says, love to Agnes. Let's go to the phones. David is calling from Massachusetts. David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi, Bob.
How are you?
Hi, this is David Jones from Massachusetts. I thought I'd give you an update on... what went on today at the Massachusetts State Constitutional Convention.
I would be very interested to know that.
Yes, well, for those of you listeners who are not aware, there was a vote for consideration to put in the Constitution an amendment to ban gay marriage. And it would have had 50 of the 200 legislators would have had to have approved it both this year and next year, and then it would have gone to a referendum ballot. Well, the news is that there is no news. The item on the agenda for consideration was number 20, so there were other items that are certainly more important, such as about health care for all.
Right.
And things like that. So it was, even though there was an attempt to push it to the front of the line, that was rejected. So what happened was they adjourned the convention without considering it, and it will be reconvened on November 9th, which will be, I believe, a few days after the election.
So that has just been taken off of the would you say it's been taken off of the political map?
No, it hasn't. They'll be voting on it on November.
But I mean, is this going to be a viable wedge issue going into the electoral season?
I think in Massachusetts, the general consensus is certainly, well, first of all, if there were actually a referendum to ban gay marriage amongst the voters of the state, it would be defeated because, since 2004, when over 8,000 people, including myself, have been married, people have seen that absolutely nothing has happened.
Right.
And the general consensus, even amongst people who are not particularly supportive of gay marriage, is that there are far more important things to consider.
You know, thank God for the level-headedness of folks there, David.
Well, I think that yes and no, and that is a lot of the legislators, a lot of them didn't want to come out and put a give a position one way or another, and that's why there's been a back and forth on both sides, for and against the amendment, about whether they have what the numbers are, because there were so many legislators who hadn't come out exactly one way or another. Well, this is, by having it after the election, this is going to force any incumbent and also anybody that's running for that position in the primary as well as the final election. And in this state, it's really the primary, because other than the governor's position, the Republican Party is almost a non-entity.
They can't mount a viable opposition.
No, there's like very, you know, there's a lot, you know, the main contests are amongst Democrats.
Okay. Well, David, thank you very kindly. I hate to cut you short, but I'm up against the news. So good to hear from you. Please keep us abreast on all of this.
So we'll have to see. The next step is November 9th.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Have a wonderful evening.
Okay. Good night, Bob.
Bye now. News is next. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your phone calls after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. In Gaza City today, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry building was destroyed in an Israeli airstrike. Earlier, Israeli aircraft bombed a house where Hamas leaders were meeting, killing 9 people. The Israeli offensive in southern Lebanon continues after guerrillas killed 8 Israeli soldiers and abducted 2 others. At the United Nations, world powers have agreed to send the Iranian nuclear issue to the Security Council for possible sanctions. Members say Iran has had enough time to consider a package of incentives and is just stalling for time. There is no immediate response from Iran. Also at the UN, China and Russia have introduced their own resolution about North Korea's recent missile launches. But unlike the Japanese resolution, it does not call for sanctions. Meanwhile, South Korea is trying to get Pyongyang back to the negotiating table. In Iraq today, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and General George Casey held a joint news conference. Casey said he believes sectarian violence is now a larger threat than al-Qaeda. Dozens of people were killed today in scattered attacks. In Washington, the Inspector General for the Homeland Security Department says its database has too many flaws to effectively divvy up federal funds to cities and states. A new report reveals that the department did not accurately assess the risks to New York City prior to September 11th. In Massachusetts, lawmakers have delayed debating a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage until November. Gay rights activists greeted the decision, which means the issue won't be considered until after the general election. On Capitol Hill, senators will vote this month on a bill that would allow oil drilling in 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. Today, they agreed to ban drilling within 125 miles of Florida's coast until the year 2022. Lawmakers agreed to the deal after they were assured they would share revenues generated by the new leases. In California's Yucca Valley, a wildfire has destroyed 30 buildings. Dozens of people have been evacuated as firefighters continue battling the blaze. The U.S. government has a new way of alerting the public to emergencies through their cell phones and computers. The system is expected to be available nationally next year. The third and final spacewalk took place today. 2 astronauts made some repairs using putty and a spatula, techniques that may be used in the future. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The FDA has approved a single pill to replace a three-pill-a-day regimen for those infected with HIV and AIDS. Gilead Sciences expects to make a triplet available next week. The U.S. Army is opening bidding for government contracts in Iraq and elsewhere. Halliburton previously held an exclusive multi-million-dollar contract with the Pentagon. The federal government says higher oil prices lifted the U.S. trade deficit in May. The trade gap now stands at nearly $64 billion. The European Union fined Microsoft $357 million today and threatened even more penalties for ignoring a 2004 antitrust order. Microsoft is calling the fine unfair and plans to appeal. A Chinese automaker has announced plans to build a new assembly plant in Oklahoma. Workers there will assemble British MGs. Toyota is recalling more than 367,000 Toyota and Lexus SUVs, saying a piece of the front console could fall off. And Nissan is recalling more than 200,000 Altima and Sentra models because of a faulty sensor. It was a record year for tribal casinos, which pulled in $22.6 billion in gambling revenue. That's twice the amount brought in by Nevada. Light sweet crude settled at $74.95 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 122 points, NASDAQ down 39, S&P 500 down 14. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Six minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. And wonderful conversation thus far. You heard the phone number. Let's continue that conversation. Let's go to Luke in Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, just Bob, make the crazy men go away, please.
Go away. You first, man. You first.
Well, I sent you the article. You see Larry Moe and Schimpf are still at it down here. Oh, God.
I know. It's Knox Vegas is not a happy place right now, is it?
Well, it's one of those things. One of the three have to win on that side. That's a bad situation. I don't care which one wins.
Yeah, you get one. Yeah. It's a no-win proposition.
It's only thing you hope is that they just. It's like, guys, that's fine. Go ahead. I want to see TV commercials every hour. Let's waste all that money we can. Come on, let's get it all spent. Come on.
I know, but doesn't it frustrate you when you think about how much all of that costs and what real good that money could do?
It's like, say, it was last week they had their debate, and it was like essentially they'd answer a question and then turn around and go, yeah, and I'm more conservative, those two.
Well, I know. David called in from Nashville a couple of nights ago, and we examined Mr. Hillary and Mr. Bryant.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, the thing is, they're after Corker because he had the more money, so he's been able to spend and been on TV more than they have. So, of course, every time all three of them appear, the two of them turn on him. So,
you just wish it could be a Republican death match and, you know, they'd all get lucky and, right.
But the door is chained shut. No one has the key.
Yeah.
Yes, indeedy. Please go right ahead. No, I saw the thing today about they were talking about the Prince of Darkness has come forward and admitted, oh, yeah, I did this.
I outed her.
Oh, I'm just sitting there. It's just like, you know. You're just sitting there just wanting to go, people, just always remember, as bad as the first article was, the second article, the one on Brewster Jennings, was worse. I mean, that's where he did real damage.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, exposing her was a crime, and, I mean, it was one of those things where she was known because he was a public figure, but no one knew who she was, per se, you know what I mean? But then also he ties it also to the company.
Yep.
And it's like I say, they still have never released that, essentially a wrap-up report about what happened when they had to close it down. and whether or not anybody disappeared.
Right. Well, I mean, this is... Well, I don't, we'll frankly never know because, you know, that's classified. How many people got killed because of Karl Rove's loose lips sinking ships? We won't know. That's a state secret.
Anybody that probably got killed probably wasn't even anybody really in it. It probably was just ancillary people that had nothing to do with it. But people on the other side are going to take no chances, just kill them.
Sure. I mean, that's how you when a spy gets outed, spies, you know. Spies are the one place where you don't get any Geneva Conventions or anything, I don't think.
Well, sort of like, yeah, he was the cable man. Kill him. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just depends how crazy you were. But a minute ago you were talking about Kim Jong crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know the problem the Japanese have, though. They're so used to fighting just one big lizard. It's, you know, it's...
Mothra!
You know, and you have to have the remote control robot tanks, you know.
Yeah, but I said at the beginning, there's that article over at The Onion. Kim Jong Il has turned himself into a 70-foot, 255-ton giant robot. You know, so. Yeah.
Well, that they can handle. That they know how to take care of. You know.
True enough. No, but it is. It's a scary situation, Luke.
Well, I heard somebody say it one day, and they said, you know, if you attack him, that's fine. But you do understand, within an hour, Seoul is the world's largest cemetery.
Yeah, I mean. We don't think about the Korean Peninsula. We just slap don't think about it.
Well, and the thing of it is, when they put the DMZ in, that DMZ is almost dead. It's essentially the north border of Seoul. I mean, Seoul is butted right up against the dang thing.
Yes, it is. And what Andy sent in, 500,000 shells per hour.
My brother was in the Air Force, got out a couple of months ago, but at one time, he was in charge of a unit over there that, at the time, they had these portable MASH units.
Mm-hmm.
That flew around to disaster sites, and that was one of his jobs, was maintaining that. He had a crew of six, and then they had contractors. So essentially, his department was six people that were U.S. Everybody else was just South Korean contractors.
And one of the things we learned about contractors going into Iraq, you know, we had contractors with Halliburton who were supposed to carry the mail. And we found out when you got contractors and the general says, you know, the mail will go through, the contractor can say, yeah, to hell with you. Mail ain't going through. I'm going home.
It's like, here, you want to take it. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. You drive it up there. That's crazy people. I ain't going.
Well, we saw the thing now that Halliburton's going to have to bid. It's amazing. You got to wonder how many of the companies that are going to be bidding are actually Halliburton subsidiaries.
Well, can you say election year?
It's like, and amazingly enough, I bet you right before the election, they'll put a hold on it for a month or two, till after the election. And once the election's over, well, we've rethought our strategy.
Well, and yeah, that's how it works. Well, you know, we tried to bid it out to other companies, but there aren't any other companies. There's only Halliburton.
Well, we don't pay attention. Those weren't good enough. Yeah. Well, I saw today that the big thing they were talking about today is everybody is Rudy going to run for president? It's like, oh, please let him run just for a few minutes.
I want to see him run just to demoralize the knuckle dragon mouth breathing cultists from the religion industry, Luke.
Like I say, you'll be able to hear that scream for a state or two. I mean, they'll be mobilizing against. It'd be amazing what the stuff is they'll put up against Rudy. I figured he was going to wait. Now, it may not even be his people. It may just been somebody just said, hey, well, let's run something on Rudy.
Well, you know, I mean, let's. I figured
Rudy was going to wait and hold his fire and let McCain and George Allen and Romney beat the crap out of each other, then show up at the very end and go, hey, I'm here.
Well, but see, I think there's, I mean, I'm, you know, I've got an irony detector that's, you know, supercharged. And I want to hear the Republican Party in the Deep South, Luke, talking about how they will never elect another blue state liberal president of the United States. That would be Rudy.
Well, like I say, I still want to see him sometime. Just to see somebody out, some of these knuckle draggers, you know, I want to see Robertson or somebody defending Rudy against it. And you're sitting there going, oh, so now we're in favor of adultery, are we?
Well, what do you? I mean, but it can be done if.
Oh, I know, but I mean, it'd just be fun to watch the contortion.
I know, but the saying used to be, well, if Nixon can go to China, then you know, fill in the blank. But now in 2006, Luke, the saying is, well, if McCain can go to Liberty University.
I tell you that. But did you see the? Oh, she's pet there and lost. Sorry.
That's okay.
Had that dang thought lost. Oh, but the John Dean interview with the Oldman last night.
Our friend Benedict at Large was kind enough to send me the audio. I listened to that this morning.
I mean, theirs is downright chilling.
Yeah, well, I mean, when John Dean tells you that you're, you know, we're not at fascism, but we can see it from here.
Well, I mean, the thing he told about G. Gordon. Oh gosh.
Yeah, just don't do it at home. Don't kill me at home. Yeah, tell me what street corner you want to kill me on. But Gordon Liddy is, I mean, there's not enough Thorazine to stabilize Gordon Liddy.
Well, you know what I mean? It's one of those things, like they said, Nixon could have told him to kill himself, and he'd asked where, when, and how do you want me to do it.
And the only pity is that Nixon didn't.
Ooh. On that list of things to do and just didn't get around to it.
Let's see. Today I meet with Billy Graham and complain about Hollywood Jews. Tomorrow, tell Gordon Liddy kill himself. Never made it. You know, that was the next day in August.
Well, you know, while you mentioned Hollywood, I saw we lost a very, very good actor the last day or two, Bernard Hughes.
Oh, yes. I saw that.
He was one of those people that you saw it meant everything. You know what I mean? But he was one of those people that was just played at that point in his life, was playing the older grandfatherly type.
Well, I mentioned the other night one of my favorite little unrecognized films. Agnes and I watched it together early in our relationship, a movie with Michael J. Fox called Doc Hollywood. And Bernard,
the older doctor.
And Bernard J. Hughes was the old curmudgeonly doctor. He said, son, you been sampling your daddy's chew again? Drink this Coca-Cola. But, what a wonderful actor. He had a CBS comedy series that was fairly short-lived but quite good in the 70s called Doc.
Yep, he did. And he had Merlin.
Uh-huh.
And he had something in between, but I cannot remember.
But Doc I always remember because that was the first TV launching pad for a young comedian with a very bizarre existential style who came on with a banjo and a white suit and an arrow through his head. Steve Martin played the son-in-law on Doc.
I just always remember Steve Martin the first time it was the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah.
When he still had brown hair.
Right. I don't think he'd finished his philosophy degree by then. That's where you get the white hair.
He was writing for them essentially. And I think they kind of gave him the spot just sort of as a thank you.
Yeah, and then he picks up that first acting gig on that Doc program. Yeah, Bernard Hughes, great actor.
Oh, I tell you. But like I say, I'm sitting here right now. I won't tell you what channel. It's the channel we're not supposed to watch.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sitting here watching The Prince of Darkness, and it's like, somebody with a stake, come on.
Bring a mirror, bring a cross, throw some holy water. Make it interesting.
Well, it's one of those things. You want somebody, the guys with the hoods coming here, you take him and you pull off the hood, and it's Larry King. And it's like, got another one.
Well, you know, interesting piece, and you know, you're very astute about following media, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch the New York Times article about Keith Olbermann?
Yes.
Did you?
O'Reilly.
Yeah. Did you notice the median age of O'Reilly's audience?
Oh, well, there's one of the bits in Crooks and Liars where he's talking about that, where he's doing the as I call it, the Ted Baxter impression, and he's talking about, he says, Bill O. He says, your average audience is like 71, and they're disappearing fast. You better hurry.
But, I mean, those, apparently legitimate demographics. Bill O'Reilly's median age viewer is 71. That means there are as many people older than 71 as there are under.
And I think Olbermann's mean age on his people is like 59.
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's like, Bill, you better hurry. Your audience is disappearing fast.
Well, it's
it is.
You know, Olbermann.
And Olbermann, you know, they talk about the numbers. Olbermann's been making jumps on him. You know what I mean?
Well, it's nice for me because I don't have to stay up all hours now to see the rerun because they put it on at nine a.m. Yeah.
Well, you see what's happening with MSNBC, didn't you? I mean, now that they've just about pulled half their shows off, they're running all these lockdown documentary things.
Right, and they're letting. they're letting Keith Olbermann carry the content in large part. Is Bullwinkle's baby sister still there? I haven't noticed.
I don't think so. If she is, she may be doing documentaries or something for them. You know what I mean? But like I said, I don't even know if they have anybody after Scarborough anymore. I don't even know if the bow tie's there, because I think they moved him up to Abrams' old spot.
Oh, geez.
So I think after that point, they start running all reruns again. And I think they start off with like a couple hours of documentaries. So, I mean, they've got all those nice NBC documentaries to run.
Well, you know, it's nice to see them stepping back from the abyss, too. Luke, awfully good talking to you. I've got to roll on and hit a break. That's the way things go around here. That's all right. No, it's always a pleasure. It's always a blast. Thanks, Luke.
Bye, bud.
Bye now.
Bye.
Sorry about the dead air. Tell you what, brief musical interlude. We may be having a little crisis. Sorry about that. Things like that happen here. But I'll start some music and hopefully be back in a very short period of time. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
Are rising fuel prices keeping you at home? Then here's some good news from the IRS. First, your purchase of a new hybrid or electric vehicle entitles you to a tax deduction that could amount to several thousand dollars. And you don't have to itemize to get this tax break. Second, if you're claiming the standard mileage rate for business travel in 2005, remember to figure in the 8 cents per mile increase for the last 4 months of the year. For more news on tax deductions, visit IRS.gov.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
Do that again. That was my fault. Agnes is in the next room. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And it's about 26 minutes past the hour. We'll call that our bottom of the hour break if that's okay with you guys. Had to break away. I mean, there's real life going on around me. Sometimes it's real sad life. Kind of dodged a bullet there. And my son popped his head into the studio and sort of pantomimed, "Grandfather just fell." He appears to be okay. And I get a lot of email from you. To gay people having food. Last night I mentioned that Steve Lonergan, mayor of Bogota, and yes, it is Bogota, New Jersey. It ain't Bogota. It's Bogota, New Jersey. Objecting to Hispanic people having a billboard inviting them to come get a cold iced coffee at McDonald's. And of course, though he was not listening, I reminded Mayor Lonergan that there was a time not that far long ago where his forebears were told Irish need not apply. At what point in time can we just, well, it's like an episode of ER, isn't it? When the patient dies on the table and they look at the doctor and goes, "Call it." Yeah, okay, death occurred at 9:52 and 16 seconds. At what point do we make the call on the Republican Party? At what point do we simply look up and say, "Listen, they're not even worth dialoguing with anymore. There's no dialogue to have because every time we try to talk, it talks about something that matters. Oh, let's talk about this illegal war. Oh, you're all American. Damn, I scraped my knuckle walking on it again." And we try to have a dialogue about health care in the United States, and it turns out to be a Republican con job to pay off the pharmaceutical industry. And it's got a hole in it you could drive a Mack truck through. Yeah, it pays for seniors' drugs up to like $2,500. Then there's a $5,000 hole where Granny gets to eat little Friskies again. And it's this way with every debate. We need an immigration debate. We want to
We want to put up tent cities on the Arizona-New Mexico borders with Mexico, and we want to house the illegal aliens there. And we want them to build a fence. Sir, there are 45 million uninsured Americans. Well, just as long as we don't insure no Mexicans, all right? At what point do we call the death of the Republican Party as a legitimate organ of political debate in this nation? When did it happen? It has already happened. The Republican Party declared its own death when it sent out under its own auspices that brochure to Arkansas and West Virginia only in 2004 that's with a picture of John Kerry and a knife through a Bible or some such. Do you remember that? Of course. I mean, they were pretty much dead to me then. As I mentioned yesterday, I was out and about, and I drove over to Beckley, and I had some running around to do. And I heard a caller into the right-wing show over there say, of course, thousands of years ago, I don't believe in millions because I don't believe it that way, but the earth is certainly thousands of years old. People who belong to the Republican Party are not capable of debating an issue. You know, I hear all this stuff about, the centrists in America, there's the heart of America. Horse feathers. The beating heart of America is progressive and liberal and unashamed to be so named. We want to talk about why 45 million people in America get sick and can't go to the doctor. We want to talk about why children living below the poverty wage limit can't have appropriate wellness care. Why do we have to wait until they're sick? But you see, that's the way America is now. Most of America's poor use America's emergency rooms for primary care. Everything from the sniffles to a fractured this or a broken that or Johnny stepped on a nail. It's emergency room care, and it is crushing. It is crushing America's critical care infrastructure. Well, if they'd just stay away from the emergency room, emergency care would be fine in America. Why they gotta go? You know, this is the line from A Christmas Carol where Scrooge says, have they closed down the poorhouses? Or some such. At what point do we declare the Republican Party dead? Oh, it's walking around in a sort of automatonic state. You know, it raises up every 2 years, every 4 years, and says, liberal bad. You know, this is Frankenstein. Fire bad. Rawr. That's all they got. The Republican Party has not one issue on which it can carry out a meretricious or meritorious debate. Not one. Isn't that pitiful? This is Lincoln's party. And it cannot debate a single issue because it does not have a viable position. The Republican position on health care is to talk about flag burning. The Republican response to talking about decent wages for all Americans is to talk about them Mexicans are getting your job. They do not have a single issue on which they can maintain any kind of a debate or a discussion or a dialogue. But then again, what's the other side to health care in this country? What is the other side to my position, to our position? What is the other side to saying all Americans should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick? The other side of that debate is, no, they shouldn't. I don't want anything to I can't carry on a conversation with a guy who thinks that a kid sick shouldn't be able to go to the doctor. I can't. You know, just because the Fox News puts on two people, well, you know, this is the pro-healthcare side and this is the anti, and they're equally valid positions. The hell they are! There is only one position on wages in this country, and that is everybody deserves an opportunity to be fairly paid for the work that they do. Because the other side of the debate is, no, they don't. How do you defend that? Well, you know, business, if we raise the minimum wage $2, the economy will collapse. Is there anyone in America that actually believes that? Is there? Because if there is, whoever it is that believes it needs to have all the sharp items and belt and shoelaces taken away from them. Because they're like to hurt themselves. Because they're not very intelligent. There are not always two balanced and equally opposing sides to an argument. The Iraq War. We got to bring them home now. Now. I got a story in the stack over there where I can't get to it right now of a young man who died, a Canadian, who died in Afghanistan. And he was so miserable. He wrote home talking about how there wasn't enough food. And he was so miserable, he went to a chaplain saying, look, if I said I was contemplating suicide, could I come home? And the chaplain said, no, dear hey. You're stuck here in Afghanistan, eh? Because we got us a right-wing prime minister here, and we're kind of stuck with George Bush's war, eh? What debate can we have with the Republican Party? Agnes is back now. I'm putting down my headphones. We're not taking a break. I'm just jumping over to the other chair so I can see some of these things I'm talking about. Be right there. Okay, I'm back. And I didn't even lose my train of thought. How do you debate the healthcare issue with a Republican? There is no answer in this country but one simple thing. Overthrow them. Get rid of them. Let them sit with their thumbs up their butts in the backs of the back seats of the Senate and the House of Representatives and prattle on about flag burning and gay marriage. Let Bill Frist go home and watch an endless loop of Terri Schiavo and swear that she had cognition. I've diagnosed cognition. Sometimes we are faced with a situation where there's no compromise area on any of these issues. Every American must be able to go to the doctor or the hospital when they need to do so. and not be faced with lifelong ruin for having done it. There's no other position. There is no other side. The insurance industry will damned well try to create another side. Oh, well, you know, but you know the answer to that. That's the insurance industry. That's some CEO who makes $700 million a year worried that he'll only make $400 million. That is not the other side of a debate. That's just pure narcissistic greed. Now, I mentioned that story, and I want to go back to it. This is from the Toronto Star. We're talking about Corporal Anthony Boneka. He was 21 years old. He wasn't suicidal, but he went to the priest to see if he could get out that way. He hated it over there. This is his girlfriend's father talking because his girlfriend doesn't have a boyfriend anymore. He hated it over there. He was misled as to what he was going to do to be there, what was going to be there when he got there, and what he would be doing. He was very mad about it. Well, I don't know how it works in Canada, but if he was American and he'd been very mad about it, well, you know, he might have been charged like Lieutenant Watata for not liking George Bush enough. They cut rations. They run out of water. By the end of the week, they'd have no food and water. And he was blown into his constituent parts. Thunder Bay, Ontario, he's from. My God. There's a picture there of the young man and his girlfriend, and they just look like decent young people with a whole future in front of them. And the future is gone. Thanks to George W. Bush. There is no debate. There is no debate about the war. Don't let any moderate triangulating Democrat or any right-wing Republican tell you that there is a debate to be had. All that crap that John McCain and Hillary Clinton are talking about, well, you've got to have a debate. We need a national discussion about the war. The hell with them. The hell we do. We must get out now. Now, I know that Agnes can't wiggle her little nose and make all our soldiers come home. But we cannot approach this from the standpoint of Brown versus Board of Education and talk about all deliberate speed. We need to start filling planes with soldiers and start flying them to the United States now. Every day that we do not is another day of hell and tragedy and horror for another family in Thunder Bay, Ontario, or Albuquerque, Rancho Cucamonga, Peoria, Florence, Alabama, Somerset, Kentucky, Kingdom City, Missouri, Dubuque, Iowa, the Bronx, Providence. And as a person of conscience, I am not willing to participate in seeing that horror perpetrated again and again and again and again in the United States. And I do not care to read another story about a revenge killing of two American soldiers who were beheaded because they were part of a unit that raped a little 15-year-old girl. Yeah, I ran across something in Editor and Publisher. Apparently, there's been a little bit of journalistic duplicity going on in that regard, too, because even though she was a 15-year-old little girl, the media has repeatedly referred to her as a woman. An Iraqi woman. Because they are afraid to use the language that will carry the force and effect of the facts. Ah, you know, they only raped an Iraqi woman. It's not like they raped and burned the body and killed the family of a 15-year-old little girl. Trust me, we've raised one. We're raising two more. At 15, they're still little girls. One of ours may be 18. When God willing that I should live so long, when she is 50, she will still be daddy's little girl. And that was daddy's little girl. Well, daddy got wasted, too. And the baby got wasted. I'm tired. No. See, we don't get away with saying, well, you know, we caught the guy that did it, and it turns out he had a personality disorder, so he was, like, crazy and stuff. Uh-uh, baby. No. Because, see, he had the psychological battery workup when they signed him in. And he was sane enough to do it then, and he was sane enough when he went and raped that little girl and burned her body and murdered her family. And it's going to happen again, and it's going to happen again, and it's going to happen again. And the Iraqi people are sick and tired of it, and their government is saying, look, this business that you declared you've got your own immunity, we're going to start trying some of you. Give you a little dose of Iraqi justice. I suggest we get out of there before Iraqi justice rains on us like the gentle rain of heaven upon the just and the unjust. Leave now. Leave now. There is no debate. It can't cut and run. We all know now what cut and run means. It's a nautical term. It's what happens when your anchor is stuck to the seafloor and the storm is coming, and if you stay put, you will surely die. But instead, you cut that anchor rope and you run with the tide and you live to see another day. Cut and run sounds like a pretty good strategy, but it sounds cowardly, doesn't it? Cutting and running is what the captain does when he actually cares about the crew that is in his care and in his charge and with whom he is for whom he is responsible. I guess it's just as well that the wingnuts don't have the balls to call this program. Because I don't know if I could carry on a conversation with them. I can barely stand. You'll notice I have dutifully not touched the business about Israel doing everything in its power to start World War III by invading Lebanon today. You'll notice I haven't done that. Because I can't stand that debate. I can't stand that discussion. Our good friend Mark Levine had a take on it today with which I profoundly disagreed. But, you know, welcome to the Head On Radio Network. This is not a mega, you know, this is not an endless loop. We will disagree with one another. And I can't agree with slaughtering little girls. Yeah, not a Palestinian woman. No, several little girls to get one guy. That is a calculus that I cannot stomach and I cannot tolerate. And I guess Alan Dershowitz or something, he's an anti-Semite, eat me. No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. Okay, let's have a giggle. Let's try to end light. You know Dear Leader is going to Germany, right? He's going to go and meet with Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany. He's visiting Mecklenburg-Vorpommern. That's her home district. in the former East Germany. And suddenly East Germany looks a lot like it used to look when the Soviets were there, because it's ringed with barbed wire, and there are tanks and warships and fighter planes. Because George Bush, a man that 84% of Germany despises with good reason, George Bush is coming to town on the way to the G8 summit in Russia. How much is it costing the German people to host the worst human being on planet Earth? Well, no, I tell you what. Now we can put George Bush and Kim Jong-il and that creepy guy from Tajiki Kurji, what's your stand, that boils his political enemies alive. We can put put him in the same room. He's not the worst person on planet Earth. He just happens to be the most successful killer on planet Earth. The worst person on planet Earth might be his mother. But at any rate, they're going to a place called Stralsund. And the budget for hosting George Bush for a couple of days, the budget has already climbed from £19.7 million upwards. They've doubled, okay? £8 million, they've jumped to £16 million. $19.7 million was the starting place. We're already paying a plane load of Secret Service agents to run around coordinating something called Operation Ironclad. And in Operation Ironclad, they're stringing 40 tons of barbed wire around a hotel in Heiligendamm. Welders have sealed 400 drain covers, 1,200 manhole covers in a 16-kilometer radius from the hotel have been treated similarly. 11 naval speedboats are patrolling the harbor, 15 patrol boats, 28 high-speed inflatables. Fishing boats and pleasure craft have been ordered to stay at anchor. All residents had to move their cars to a special area 11 kilometers, you know, roughly 5 miles from home. Because George Bush is a coward. George Bush is yellow. George Bush is a chicken. And guess what? They'll do the same thing here that they did in Austria. You do know that when he visited Austria a couple of weeks ago, they installed special plumbing to collect his poopy. Really. The toilet paper was flown in from the United States because this man is so whacked out of his mind on drugs, they don't want anybody analyzing it and finding out. Tasters. George Bush employs and will employ tasters because he's afraid someone will poison him. When, Lord God, when does the era of the coward nation end? When can we go back to being something approaching what we ought to be? Bold, brave, peace-loving. When? Well, I have the answer. January 21st, 2009. Sooner, mind you, if we can get a Democratic majority in the House and Senate, and impeach George Bush, remove him legally from office, and subject him to the justice of the world court. That's when we can stop being the coward nation whose leader is only allowed... Oh, God, I can't even say it. Can you imagine that? Your tax dollars are going to build George Bush a special port-a-john in Europe, because the Secret Service is afraid someone might catch his poo. Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Thomas Jefferson. Mr. Jefferson, you get Mr. Adams over here. I got a good one for you. 230 years from now, there's going to be a president of the United States who's afraid that the people in Europe were going to steal his poop.
Yeah.
What? Hey, Ben, we got a good one. No, we're not pulling your leg. Put down the kite. Really? Really? This is what happened. This is what happens when you're potty trained by Barbara Bush. That's all I can say. Look, it's over for tonight. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your evening with me, with us. Because, of course, my lovely wife, my darling wife, Agnes, produced the program. Brian Reznor announced, Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives and the podcasting of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives of some